I'm Peter Bonner McNiss, and he is Chris Lang. And welcome to another of these regular property briefings. And a warm welcome to you, Chris.
Well, thank you. It's good to be with you.
You've been negotiating on behalf of clients now for quite a number of years. When we were talking before off-air, you mentioned investors needed to be aware of what you termed negotiating disruptors. And I wonder if you might perhaps explore some of them today.
Well, these disruptors are what I generally call nasty tricks to watch out for. And just so we're clear, I'm not for a moment suggesting that all of these tactics will necessarily arise during every negotiation. However, you do need to be able to recognise them as being the times or the situations when the other party is becoming desperate and, you know, when things simply aren't going their way. And they'll try to introduce these sort of tactics to unsettle you or get you off balance and in the process turn the negotiation back to their advantage.
Okay. Where should we make a start?
Well, I guess the first thing is they try and create confusion. And generally they'll do this by making a series of offers or counter-offers. And as I said, these are intended to unbalance you and cause a distraction. There's no clear logic as to where they're heading. And as a result, you tend to make unnecessary concessions to try and bring the negotiation back on track. And that's exactly what they want you to do. And you just got to be aware of it. It can seem quite natural what they're doing. If someone has used this tactic before, they don't even break stride. But it's that confusion. And then you also get them when they feign or pretend to accommodate things that you've raised. And generally the technique for doing that is postponing the discussion on the issues that are delicate and are going to cost them in the negotiation. And, you know, they'll just, as I say, defer those. And they don't agree to it, but the perception is that it's been dealt with. I mean, it's a smart move, and it's something you could use also because, you see, such issues are more likely to be resolved after you invest further time and effort into a negotiation. And that's something you need to remember for your advantage too, because you see, if you can get people to spend time, effort and money in the process of a negotiation, when you raise or re-raise one of these sensitive issues, they're less likely to object to it. If you raise it at the beginning, they'll just dismiss it and won't even entertain it. But having made headway in the process of the negotiation, if you then raise something, instead of dismissing it, they'll try and come up with a workaround which may well suit you and still meet some of your objectives. And then you've got what I guess I call seduction, where they're presenting their interests as really being part of what you're seeking. I mean, it's pretty clever, but it's deceptive. In other words, changing the rules, changing the ground rules, and, as I said, trying to make it look as though they're doing something that fits your interest, but really it serves their interest, not yours.
I would imagine sometimes the other party might try to intimidate you.
Well, yes, people will try and do that, and they'll try and create uncertainty, and that's different to confusion because they're trying to make you nervous about something, and that will obviously help their cause because you might make a bad judgment as to what concessions you should make, and so they're using that to maneuver you or force you towards their desired outcome. So if they can unsettle you and make you unsure of something that you thought you were pretty certain about, that can often be used to achieve something that you wouldn't normally give up in a negotiation. And plus, then you've got people who make threats and other aggressive behaviour that they'll display. I mean, it's simply, you need to recognise these people for what they are. I mean, they're bullies. And you can stand your ground, and you don't have to agree to or agree with whatever they're proposing. And even if they start to be aggressive, you simply say, well, why would you say that? What are you trying to say? And sometimes that's the best way to diffuse it, because they've then got to justify what they're doing or saying. And in the process, sometimes it sounds so stupid that even they have to backtrack. And then you get people that want to raise the stakes. You know, they're being stubborn and they're demanding you make even greater concessions than what you're doing. And this is simply a clumsy way to negotiate, normally by someone that doesn't negotiate a lot. I mean, the way to handle that is you respond with what I call a conditional concession. And where you might say, well, I could perhaps do that or agree to that if you could do this. So in other words, you don't give anything away without getting something immediately from the other side. So then they've got to weigh up, well, how important is this to me? You know, maybe it's not as important. If I don't want to give away what you're asking for in return for what they're asking for, then you go back and start again, and those two issues are off the table. However, if what they're saying is important to them, then you get your concession, because that's the only way you're going to give that away. So you've just got to be able to think on your feet all the time.
Tell me, do you ever come across people who want to personalise things?
Well, yes, people do try and get personal. I mean, they want to try and exploit their relationship with you. In other words, a difference in status, friendship, mutual esteem, an ongoing need to work together. And they're all the things they'll bring up. In other words, if they consider themselves superior to you, they'll try and use the power that they perceive runs with that position. I mean, my view has always been that each deal needs to stand on its own merit, and that you shouldn't involve damaging the relationship, nor do you need to pander to the other party. You see, you have to, certainly in my position, where I'm continually dealing with a number of agents on behalf of clients, I have to have a good ongoing relationship with them, and they with me too. So I can step around some of these things, but where you are negotiating directly with someone with whom you may or probably may not have any subsequent relationship with them, sometimes they will try and, as far as dealing with property, sometimes they will try and exploit that situation and, you know, try and pull rank on you to serve their own interests in the process. Then also you've got manipulation, where they're trying to forcefully persuade you that it would be in your best interests to give in on certain demands. And again, I just simply respond with, well, explain to me exactly why that's the case, or just how that would work. In doing so, that tends to unsettle their position, because whenever anyone tries to make a statement that is intended to box you into a corner, by simply asking them to justify it is not something they're expecting. Particularly, as I said, in a lot of cases, people, and Donald Trump's an example, I mean, he is a bully as far as negotiating is concerned. He's just belligerent. And, you know, there are people like that, and you have to be calm and composed and simply say to them, look, I hear you. Just how does that work? What are you trying to say? Just explain that for me. And as I said, more often than not having to do that, which is a surprise. Very few people will challenge them. And it's not that you're being aggressive. You're just asking what is a logical question, but are doing it in a very non-threatening manner. But the fact you asked the question moves the unsettling intent of their question back onto them.
Are there any other tactics that might come to mind?
Well, perhaps the only final one would be the act of termination, and that is where they make out as though they're about to step out of the negotiating process by making take-it-or-leave-it offers. A selling agent once told me that his client would not entertain a due diligence period and therefore we may as well stop negotiating that right now. Now, ignoring that, I submitted a formal written proposal knowing that he was legally obliged to convey that to his client. And needless to say, we ended up achieving a due diligence period. Now, I mean, that wasn't the only thing we were negotiating, but you never accept first up what someone says. Quite often, I mean, they're used to getting their own way, making a strong, aggressive statement, and if it's not challenged, that thing has been resolved, it's off the table. But as I said, knowing that an agent has to they have to submit all offers, but if it's verbal, they can always argue that the conversation never took place. Whereas if you put it in writing, they are duty-bound, legally duty-bound, to submit that to their client. And invariably, you'll find if your request is reasonable, that the vendor will entertain it. And I mean, quite often people will object to a due diligence period. And my answer to that is, well, are you telling me there's something wrong with the property? And if they say, well, no, there's nothing. I say, well, all I'm wanting to do is to verify what you're telling me is correct. I said, I believe you, but I need to check that out.
That was really good. And I'm sure it has provided some very helpful reference points.
Well, look, if you like, I'll put together these various tactics as a checklist and we can make them available for download below this podcast.
That would be really great if you could. And once again, many thanks.
It's always a pleasure.